Hello, and welcome to another episode of Nonsense and Noise, a podcast about the queer person of color, pop culture, and media experience. I'm your host, Nathan Cotto, and it is May 19th. I'm slowly learning my lesson, I guess, recording slightly earlier and earlier. And just wanted to say hi, and I'm still alive. I was going to record an episode for April, but those plans ended up falling through. Those plans are currently being remade, so that way we can actually get an episode out about that particular topic. But otherwise, I've been, you know, pretty busy with work and trying to balance my life, I guess, with the demands of work. And as a result, I have not really been podcasting too much. But the other day I was thinking about webtoons and was like, oh, you know what, maybe I'll just like talk about that, because I have read a whole bunch of series on webtoons, and I think there was a lot to be said for that, so we end up with this episode. So but yeah, otherwise I've been like pretty busy with work, and like I said, just trying to stay afloat. Things have been also just tough outside of work. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world, and I've been just trying to maintain a lot of sanity. So, like I said, just like, basically once work is done, I close my computer and I'm like, I don't really want to do any more work. And podcasting sometimes does feel like work, just because I have to prepare the topic for the episode, get the episode together. If I have guests on, then have to coordinate schedules and everything. And of course, on top of that, I have to edit. So, yeah, it has been an ordeal, but I'm here, and we should be getting a couple more episodes between whenever this episode releases and the end of June. I have two episodes planned. One of them is a lot more research heavy. The other one is a lot more just like hanging out with friends. So hopefully, the friend hangout one will be easier to coordinate and just do and edit. And then I can actually spend some time recording and or doing research for the actual like scripted episode when that happens. So hope everyone has been well. Otherwise, it is starting to look a little bit more like spring slash summer here in New York. We've had some warmer weather recently, which has been nice. But it's also still very much like we're bouncing between like cold weather and warm weather here, and it's wild. We love global warming, I guess. So anyways, getting into pop culture updates, we're starting off with some video games. I only have two this month. The first one came out a lot earlier this month, on the 9th of May, called Little Kitty Big City, for the Switch, Xbox, and PC. And this is an adventure puzzle game where you play as a lost kitten trying to return home. It is just as cute as it sounds. I've watched a friend play it, and it looks just really cute, really adorable. That is Little Kitty Big City. The next one is actually coming out in a couple days as of after record, and that is Senua Saga Hellblade 2 on Xbox and PC, coming out on May 21st. And this is a hack and slash game with a very, very strong story. If you guys have played Hellblade 1, Senua's Sacrifice, then you know about the gravity of this game. But basically, in the Hellblade saga, you play as Senua, and she is now in a different location facing down different gods. And I think the main selling point here was just like her continuing evolving relationship with her psychosis. In the first game, her psychosis plays a major part in defining the game mechanics. I think that the publisher, Ninja Theory, or the developer, Ninja Theory, actually did a very, very good job of portraying this psychosis in a very respectful way, making it an actual part of the game mechanics in a very cool way, to help with puzzles and combat. rather than stigmatizing it. I know a lot of people who were consulted by Ninja Theory on the initial game really liked it a lot, and they felt like it was very respectful, because they were actually consulted for their experiences. People who were mentally ill, living with disorders like schizophrenia and other psychoses. So that is coming out in a couple days. I will actually be streaming that on Twitch, as usual, and I'll put that in the episode notes, as well as I'm plugging that at the very end for where you can find me. So yeah, that's exciting. I don't anticipate being finished with this game in one sitting. I think Hellblade 2 is much more involved than Hellblade 1, just because, Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, the first game, I think was more of a sort of like passion project, and when it was put out, it was sort of, I don't think they were expecting the amount of reception and positive feedback that the initial game got. So I think they have now had more resources to invest into Senua's Saga. So that is exciting. Once again, that Senua's Saga Hellblade 2 coming to Xbox and PC on May 21st. So that's the only video games that I had to highlight for this month. In terms of movies, I've got three for you of varying, I guess, caliber slash like highbrow, lowbrowness. The first, well, it's not even highbrow, lowbrow, it's more just like the register, the medium. So the first one is a live action movie called Babes. This is coming out on May 17th, starring Alana Glazer and Michelle Buteau. These two women play two characters who grew up as best friends in New York City and are now in different places of their lives. Alana Glazer's character's name is Eden. She gets pregnant after a one-night stand and decides to keep the baby. And this also comes very shortly after Michelle Buteau's character announces to Alana Glazer's character that she's pregnant and is like very, I think, I don't think it announces that she's pregnant, but is like very visibly pregnant and is like expecting soon. And so this causes a lot of friction in their friendship, and so that's the movie is about like all of that. So that is Babes coming out on May 17th, dropped 2 days ago, as of date of record. The next one is, for all you anime heads out there, I know I have been eagerly awaiting the next installment of Haikyuu, the volleyball anime. Haikyuu, the Dumpster Battle, the next installment, is releasing on May 31st, and it's getting a wide theatrical release, which is awesome. Basically, the plot of this, in case you're not caught up, is Karasuno, the high school where Hinata goes, and plays volleyball for it, they are facing down their rivals, Nikoma. So this is obviously the next part of the story, at least in the anime. So get hyped, get excited. I don't actually know if I'm gonna see this in theaters. I do really like Haikyuu. I also, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I will. I have another friend who likes Haikyuu as well, so maybe I'll go drag her to see it in the theater. So that's Haikyuu, the Dumpster Battle, coming on May 31st. And then the next one, which is more of just a sort of general announcement, I don't think this is actually available in theaters as of right now, is an animated film called The Glassworker. It's being screened at the Cannes Film Festival next month for potential buyers, but basically this is a debut animated film from Pakistani art director Usman Riaz, and it's a movie telling about a story of war and its impacts on peoples and their relationships. Pretty timely given what's going on in Palestine. So that is The Glassworker. I'm really excited. I hope this one actually gets a wide theatrical release soon. This person's style is just super gorgeous. It really looks like a Studio Ghibli film, in terms of like the vibrancy and the animation. So yeah, hoping that The Glassworker gets bought by a sponsor and is able to be wide released. So yeah, that's all the pop culture that I have for now. I'm going to take a quick break and then we will get into the main content. All right, and we are back from the break. As I mentioned at the top of the episode, the main content for this episode is going to be sort of just general webtoons. I read and keep up with quite a number of series, and I was looking through them and I was like, oh, you know, it'd be really cool to do like a recommendation list. And I started to do this on Twitter, but of course, Twitter doesn't have the room for everything that I want to say. And of course, I'm just like, man, what other medium could I do this in? And my podcast is just like, hello, I'm here for this exact reason. So, yeah, I figured why not do a Webtoons review on my podcast? So specifically, for today, these Webtoons are going to be, Webtoons that are explicitly featuring queer, stories. And there are several of them. Some of them are popular, so you might have heard of them, and some of them are not. So we'll just get right into it. And like I said, I've read a number of webtoons, so I will say I apologize for like the first two. I don't remember exactly the plots because it's been now like maybe 2 or 3 years since I finished reading these series. They were very good, obviously. They're on the rec list for a reason. But like in terms of the stories, I forget, and I don't remember. And since these series are complete, they are on the Daily Pass system, and I don't really want to go back and reread them. Well, one of them, like, I don't really want to go back and reread specifically for reasons I will mention. But the other one, I don't know, some of it's just like laziness. So without further ado, we'll get into it. So basically what I'm gonna do here is like I'm gonna be rattling through a list of webtoons, but then I'm gonna sort of just like talk about obviously what they're about, what the queer representation was and or is, themes, what I liked about the series and what I dislike, if there is any, and then I'll also highlight the artist information. All of the titles as well as the artist information will be in the episode notes, so you can find those and check these series out if you are interested. So the first one, and I think probably one of the older series that I don't remember the entire plot to, is called Cape of Spirits. And this is by Chris Nguyen at Hakuku on Twitter. That's Hakukku. And this is a fantasy series. From what I remember, the main character is a prince of a country, and there are these magical items called tokens that have special abilities. They overall house like deities in this world, and there's one faction that is seeking to, I think, like collect all the tokens, and the other ones that are sort of like trying to prevent that from happening. I do remember there was an arc of like I think the protagonist going to some like indigenous village and like helping protect them. I really don't remember the finer details of the plot, but basically your standard like trying to save the world type deal with like superpowers slash superhuman abilities. The art was really good. And as far as the queer representation, the main character is actually gay. The story, I feel like, doesn't really build to this part. I think this is more like sort of relevant, or the plot of the comic itself is more focused on like the actual happenings of the story, and the prince just sort of happens to be gay. It's very well done. I found the actual story itself to be quite compelling when I first read it. I guess not great that I don't remember it, but then again, it has been several years and I have been reading other things. So, but yeah, I really liked the art. The story was pretty good too. And I think the biggest thing that I remember about the story here was like the prince actually taking accountability for the actions of the royal family and saying like, you know, hey, I want to make this right and everything. And I thought, you know, that's always important, especially like given that currently, and I think I've mentioned it in other places, not on the podcast actually before, but I did read this one piece about how the different generations in America have had different, like, sort of defining events for their generations that really shape generational ideology and how we treat other people and everything. So, for example, Millennials and Gen Z, I feel like the defining the things that define our generation are just ultimately like dissatisfaction with authority, just because a lot of the things that we've seen in the world, both recently and just in recent history, are basically people in authority making rules, everyone else abiding by those rules, and then people in authority flouting the rules. And the laws that they establish with impunity. So anyways, long tangent, just to say that I do think that this particular theme of like, oh, I am in power and I'm holding myself to account, I think that was a really, really great theme to see in Cape of Spirits. So once again, that's the first series, Cape of Spirits, by Chris Nguyen. And that their handle on Twitter is Hakuku, Hakuku. The next one is called Crown of Feathers. This particular series is based on the book by Nikki Paopreto. I think she's a Filipino Canadian writer, and the Webtoons series was created by Fox Kidding, and that. I'll drop all the artist information and everything on in the episode notes, as I mentioned. Crown of Feathers was really interesting, just because it was I think the premise was really cool. Basically, the main character Veronica and her sister Val are trying to become Phoenix Riders, but there are other things at play that sort of seek to prevent that from happening. One of the in terms of the actual main queer representation here, I will say that Crown of Feathers, I feel like, is a very trans adjacent story, because Veronica is a young girl and she has to hide her identity to join the Phoenix Riders and ultimately achieve her goal by pretending to be a boy, and so as a result, she cuts her hair and everything. And it's very interesting because I feel like the story over the course of time really sort of integrates the new identity that Veronica takes. She calls herself Nick, for short. But it really just like helps you sink into the identity of Nick. And really, you sort of forget that Veronica was ever a character, and so it really feels very strange at the very end when Nick is talking to the head of the Phoenix Riders and is like, "So actually, I'm a woman, and I want to join as a woman," and like, yeah, I don't know. It was interesting just because, like I said, trans adjacent. I am not trans myself, so I can't necessarily say I would claim this story for trans folks because, like, it's not my place to say, but I do think it is, like, I can definitely see someone headcanoning this character as trans just because of how the story is told, and how the character acts. The art itself is really, really gorgeous as well, and the story was quite good. There's a lot of like political intrigue and stuff, from what I remember. This is another fantasy series, so yeah. And I think, one could say that one of the themes here was like, oh, being true to yourself even at the cost of your dreams. Because I will say the series ends with Veronica saying like, "I joined the Phoenix Riders as Veronica or not at all." Which, one can say like, okay, that's gorgeous, and you get to stick to your dreams and challenge systems and maintain your true identity, while also like, I don't know, like I said, this feels like a very trans-friendly story, and like I kind of wish that the story had taken that route instead of finishing the way that it did. So this is the main series that I sort of recommend with a grain of salt, and I don't necessarily think I want to read it again because of this particular part. I don't remember exactly the episode where I would say like you could just like be done with it and like just take it as a trans story, but yeah, that is Crown of Feathers. The next one, now we're getting into stuff that's a little bit more recent slash like was more impressionable on me, and so I remember the stories a lot better. This next one is called Asterion. And this is sort of based on the premise of like when you wish upon a star type deal, what happens? And so Asterion is a story about a young non-binary character named Asterion, who has joined the Star Society, which is a secret group that works to fulfill the wishes of those who have wished upon stars. The really interesting thing about the Star Society, of course, is that they all used to be real people, or I guess not real people, like in real life, obviously, but like they used to be people in their universe. And then when they join the Star Society, all traces of them are erased from society. And there's some, I guess, level of magic, you could say. Going on, but then there's also it's very interesting because like they also abide by like very real world rules and everything. But I think it was a really cool story about just like for at least the just following the character like as they seek out a better life, and just seeing like the sort of the double-edged sword that comes with like making a wish and like you know what happens if someone were to try it and fulfill that wish. As well as just like fitting too much into a rigid mold and not really challenging authority. I think those were two of the best things that particular story did. Once again, the art was great. I think the characters are really great. As I said, like this particular series was a little bit more impressionable on me. I do remember more about what it was about. And very, very heavy emphasis on people of color in this particular series. Asterion themselves is a brown character. I don't remember if they say specifically what their background is, but there's a lot of non-white characters in this story. And like I said, or I don't remember if I actually said this, but Asterion is non-binary, and that's explicitly stated in the episode summary or the series summary. So it's a great series. I really liked it. Very charming, and a lot of commentary about found family as well. So that is Asterion, spelled Asterion. For you people who have played Baldur's Gate, it's not like Asterion from Baldur's Gate. The next series is a lot more popular, has its own Netflix series called Heartstopper. If you have not heard about this is a story about a young kid named Charlie who is in high school in, I think, the UK. And he is trying to navigate, of course, being a young high schooler, while also being the supposedly only out gay kid at his school, and dealing with a new crush that he has on his new friend Nick. I'm not gonna go any further than that, just in case somehow you've like managed to avoid seeing both the Netflix show and reading the comic. It's very, very cute, I will say. A little heavy-handed at times with themes of like, hey, we go to therapy to get help. I don't know. Like, I appreciate that, but then also at the same time, sometimes like it does feel a little corny with just like how like cardboard and stiff that particular language feels. But anyways, the series overall is just super, super cute. I think it would be something that I would have really wanted in high school just because it really just focuses on like the sort of teen experience, the young person's experience of like experiencing attraction, falling in love, and sort of navigating the day-to-day aspects of like being young and in a relationship and everything. As I mentioned before, explicitly gay, like this is and by explicit, I don't mean like sexual. I mean purely like it is very clearly spelled out that the characters are gay. So it's really cute. Like I said, the main thing I think I don't really like about it is sometimes it is very heavy-handed, but with like this is the right thing to do. But otherwise, it's a very, very cute series, and I highly recommend reading it. I've not actually watched the Netflix series, but I've heard people say the same thing, that it's very cute. So that is Heartstopper. I'm not really gonna say too much about it just because I think it's like very, very popular. The next series is called Castle Swimmer. I do think this one's also kind of popular as well. Basically, this is a fantasy series that sort of takes the whole like, oh, you know, what happens to, or like, where do prophecies come from and like how they're fulfilled? And like, what if you were a central part of a prophecy that needed to be fulfilled and you didn't want to do it? So Castle Swimmer follows the story of this creature called the Beacon. And I say creature, but like the everyone in this series, it's mermaid fantasy, where basically like all of them are different types of fish or aquatic animal, mermaids. So the first major arc deals with Kappa, the Beacon, who is a mermaid with golden scales. As he interacts with a society of sharks, with their prince named Siren, who is apparently fated to kill the Beacon, to in order to save his people. Siren's people have a curse placed on them such that they basically do not recover from the wounds that are inflicted on them. They become very scarred. Basically sounds like mermaid hemophilia. But it is a really cute series. It's a cute series and very, very gay. Siren and Kappa are currently in the series where they are now just trying to continue to explore being in a relationship together. But yeah, I think it's a really cool sort of inversion of like how are prophecies passed down in these fantasy societies? What do they actually mean? And the sort of price that comes along with these prophecies. I think in fantasy games, I think a lot of there's never really a challenge of like, okay, well, what if the hero doesn't want to, or like, you know, what's going on with the society and the culture that has, you know, produced this particular prophecy, or what's the actual real cost of this prophecy, especially if it results in someone like killing someone, and what happens if the society wants to sort of sidestep the prophecy? I think that particular part has been explored in Greek, like ancient Greek tragedy and everything. That is like the whole story of Oedipus Rex. But I do think it's a nice little like modern take on it, trying to explore that in a new medium. The art is really cute. I think it's very phenomenal. It's really very interesting to see just like how each different sea creature is made into their own mermaid race of people, I guess. I'm also the world building is also very, very interesting. I think that there's a lot to be explored still with the world building, and I think the author right now is having a lot of fun exploring the world and sort of bringing us in gradually, and exploring and fleshing out more things as the story goes along. So that is Castle Swimmer. The next comic is called The Croaking. This is more, I guess, fantasy sci-fi, but there is so th this comic focuses in on basically bird people, not like the Rito from Legend of Zelda, but more like just humans with wings, and other parts of bird biology. But it's a really cool series, sort of sci-fi focusing on political intrigue as well as like issues that, political intrigue and just looking at like, oh, you know, racial issues in a society where it's you know, different types of birds and everything, and trying to basically the main character, one of the main characters, Skra, is trying, and both of the main characters actually, Skra and Kai, are trying to uncover details about this super weapon, secret super weapon called the Croaking. So both of the main characters are gay, and it's very interesting because I feel like the comic starts off very much like, yes, they're explicitly together kind of deal. There's a lot of heavy, heavy overtones in the opening. I think in the prologue it is, where Kai and Skra first meet each other. And it's, I believe, the comic has been going for like 300 episodes now, and they have finally kissed. It's fun. It is a really fun comic, and I think the world building that the author does is also very cool. Basically, a lot of just like, oh, you thought this was it, but turns out there's like the whole wide world out there, and like there are other things going on. So yeah, the story itself is actually really cool, and I really like the characters a lot. I think they're very well done. The art is also super fun. Really love the artist and the artist's style. And yeah, I don't think, like, maybe my only complaint would be just like the burn is so slow. And it was funny because the author slash illustrator, like in her notes at the end of the chapter where they kiss, she's like, I was agonizing about this forever. And I'm just like, it's been years. It's been literally years. I think it's maybe been like 5 years that this comic has been going and they finally kissed. So I would say like maybe the pacing is the only thing that I don't really like because it's so slow. But the storyline is very good. The intrigue and everything, all the action, oh, just so great. So that is The Croaking by Megan J. Gray. I just realized that I haven't really been saying the artists and the authors. So The Croaking is by Megan J. Gray. Asterion is by Never Draws. Like I said, I'll drop all the artist information in the episode notes. Castle Swimmer is by Wendy Leon Martin. And Heartstopper is by Alice Osman. So yeah, that is The Croaking. The next one is Jackson's Diary by Paola Battaglia. And this is a story about a young boy in, I think this is set in the 80s, dealing with finding a magical journal, and sort of the hijinks that happened to him and the people in his life. It's overall very like cute and sweet and wholesome series. I mean, that's pretty much the plot. It's just like this kid is navigating high school with this magical artifact, and he's trying to deal with handling how it feels to have responsibility to influence real life events, and how those sort of fantasies that one might have about like getting back at people, or sort of like changing things about maybe one's living situation may have unexpected impact. But in terms of the queer representation, one of the characters, Exer, is in a relationship with his best friend David, and that is more or less like explicitly stated. It is very cute, and also something that I could kind of see coming from a mile away. But that's because that's called good writing. Good writing can foreshadow, and foreshadowing is a wonderful literary technique that I think more people need to be okay with, I guess, accepting. Minor sidebar, this I think was the main issue with Game of Thrones is I think the directors themselves were like so frustrated with people correctly guessing what would happen. Which, sure, on the one hand, like, it's like, damn, you guessed the twist. But also at the same time, if your writing is good enough, you should be able to foreshadow and let your audience know that, like, oh, there's something coming. And this, like, foreshadowing, I think, especially successful foreshadowing, I think allows the audience to feel catharsis when they find that their hypothesis is correct. Catharsis, of course, does not have to be negative. It doesn't have to be sad or like an expression of grief. It can be just like, ah, I feel vindicated, or like I feel so validated right now because like my theory was right. But anyways, going back to what I was saying with Jackson's Diary, I think like that particular relationship I think was foreshadowed very well. It's very well done. I would say the only thing sometimes is the series does feel a little heavy-handed with like when we have problems, we go to therapy. That was, another part of this where I'm just like, you maybe like, I don't know, find a less corny way to say this. I think it's still a good message. It just sort of reads as corny sometimes. So, which of course I don't have, I will clarify, I don't have anything against therapy. I go to therapy myself, not knocking it. I think it's a wonderful tool to have access to. I just also think like, I don't know. I don't know how there's like maybe a more natural way or like less corny way to put it, but that's just my feelings. But yes, otherwise like the art is really fun, the story is really fun, and the characters are pretty cute. And yeah, nice little like sort of supernatural high school like things aren't that serious type deal. Basically everything that I wish that Teen Wolf was, if y'all remember MTV's Teen Wolf from, oh my God, started in 2011, 2012, no, 2011. So like that show is 13 years old. Whew, wow. But if y'all remember that show, this is kind of like the sort of low stakes sort of thing that I kind of wish that Teen Wolf was, but is not. So once again, that is Jackson's Diary by Paolo Battaglia. The next series is called Boyfriends by Refrainbow. Well, so there's some controversy around this title since apparently the creator said the N-word a long time ago on Twitter. They're based in Indonesia and have since apologized for it. And I don't think there has been any other things that I've read about that particular creator. That's like the main controversy that I know about. There's also been a lot of just like arguments around the style being too cutesy and not really like giving full, I guess, weight to being queer and in a polyamorous relationship. So I know another, and then of course, another thing that I heard was someone being like, oh, like they infantilized the trans man in the cast, and like they don't really do that. Basically, the comic is just super cutesy. That's really it. That's the whole premise. So I just wanted to say, like, I do know about that. I am aware of it. So, but honestly, like, I think it's not like a terrible series. It's not, yeah, either way, I just wanted to say I am aware of all of that. And yeah, so with my review and everything, you guys can make the choice if you want to read it or not. So this series is basically just like a really cutesy like slice of life series about, or yeah, really cutesy slice of life series about a group of four young boys who meet and eventually end up in a polyamorous relationship with each other. Very, easy reading, nothing super high stakes, just a cute little fluffy story. The art is very bright and very cutesy as well, going for that just like cute pastel look. And yeah, I mean like it is pretty cute. I will say I a little bit like yeah, like it's very cute. It's not too like I wouldn't say I dislike anything about the series. It's just sort of like there, it's cutesy. Like I don't mind not keeping up with the weekly update if I don't necessarily want to. So yeah, that's Boyfriends by Refrainbow. I mean, I think the most important part about this particular series is that it's like very open and like fun representation of what it's like to be in a poly relationship. And I think that is really important to show, like, that it's possible to, live in a relationship like that and have things go well and not necessarily like over-dramatize things. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's still a cute series to check out if you are interested. The next series that is, I think, the newest one on this particular list, just in terms of when it started, is called Osora, Osora, or Osora. I'm of course taking the Japanese spin on this, by Toni Renee. And this is a story about a young prince and his inheriting his kingdom, or like growing into preparing to lead his kingdom, and against a supernatural threat. And the queer aspect for this story is Osora is trans. So it's really, really cool right off the bat. Just like the character is trans, and like it's very blatantly stated. It's interesting the, I guess, balance that this particular story strikes with representation and like the fantasy versus not of it all, because there is homophobia and like sort of casual transphobia in the story, which is sort of interesting to see, just because like, it's the way that I view it, like fantasy is an escape from the world, so like why would you recreate the same like bigotries and like issues that we have in the modern day, in a fantasy medium? That's neither here nor there. But anyways, yeah, like the world of the story has like bigotry there, both against like the like supernatural, or I guess like non-human race that this kingdom is fighting against, as well as like just different sexualities and everything. So that I think is probably like the only dislike I have about the story, but otherwise it seems really cool so far. It's still very, very early on. I think the main relationship that is being pushed is Osora, the main character who's trans, and his best friend Arias, who's a bo his bodyguard essentially. I think that's the relationship that is being pushed, and I'm all for it. Yeah, so it is pretty fun. Like I said, with at least the sort of bigotry still being in the series, Osora is trans, and that is explicitly known to Arias, his, the person, his love interest, as well as Osora's dad. And basically, Osora's entire family knows, but it is a secret from the kingdom, because I think Osora's mom, like, it was just revealed that like his mom had died in childbirth. But basically, like, due to the politics of succession in a kingdom, Osora had to be announced as a prince. So that's Osora, and I am excited to see where that series goes. The next and final title on this list, I'm going basically just off like the update schedule of when I checked in my subscribe. These have no particular order. So the last series is called To the Stars and Back, by Peglo, or maybe Peggle Zero. I think this series is just like super sweet and super cute. It's just a nice little basic slice of life about these two guys, Kangde and Bosan, and how they start off as neighbors, and they have a bunch of really goofy interactions and just sort of like their interactions and getting to know each other and eventually falling in love, and developing a relationship over time. Slice of life as they are in college, I believe. And yeah, it's just super cute, very, very slow burn, but also like there's a lot of like vindication with like, ah, they finally got together. That's great. So you actually get to see it, and much faster than, let's say, The Crow King. But very cute series, updates a couple times a week, and with like little short snippets, very slice of life. And yeah, I don't know. I personally really love the dynamic between the two characters. I do love my grumpy guys, and they're absolutely super cheery boyfriends. That is a dynamic that I really like. So, yeah, this is like classic that. So, yeah, those are all those series that I wanted to mention that I read that are queer or like have some sort of queer connection there. I, like I said, we'll drop the list in the episode notes along with the artist information so you guys can go check them out if you're interested. So yeah, I'm gonna take another quick break and then we'll be back with the final segment of the show. And we are back from the break for the last segment of the show. I call this What's Your Nonsense, and basically you get to talk about something that I've been into recently, or something that brings me joy, or something, yeah, that just seems to be like a niche interest. So for this month's nonsense is actually the comic series on Webtoons that really inspired me to do this review thing at all, and it's called Hand Jumper by Sleep Across. And it is a Korean superhero kind of deal, but it's like superhero crossed with like kind of, I guess, think of Watchmen style, like who like watches the superheroes type deal. So yeah, it seems really, really, I mean, it's a great, really intriguing story. There's time travel, which is like something I really, really freaking love in a story. So like I don't know, it's just great. The art style is fantastic. There are also, I mean, the really cool thing that Webtoons does is that some of their episodes you can actually have audio with them, like as a sort of background soundtrack. And Sleep Across actually does their own audio design, and it is fantastic. I think of all of the Webtoons that I read, Hand Jumper is my absolute favorite for just like all aspects of what you can do on Webtoons. So, yeah, that is my nonsense. Highly recommend reading Hand Jumper. It is such a fun series. So thanks for listening to another episode. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/nonsenseandnoisepod. And this show is completely independently run. Patreon is the best way to support me. On the Patreon, there are three tiers. Tier one is a shout out. You get recognized for your contribution on the podcast. Tier two gets you access to bonus content. I do in one of the upcoming episodes I have is actually planned for the bonus feed. And that is the researched episode. So that is tier two. Of course, all these successive tiers get you the rewards of the previous one as well. So the final tier is tier three, and that gets you the ability to pitch topic ideas that you might want to hear my perspective on. So that's the Patreon. If you want more of me, you can find me on Twitch, Instagram, and Twitter, all at the same handle, at Kato Not Kato. That's KahtoNotKayTo. So, yeah, you can find me there. As I mentioned before, I will be playing Senua's Saga Hellblade 2 once it comes out on Tuesday on Twitch. Trying to decide what time I want to go live there, but I will probably post that on my Twitter, so y'all can find that there. And yeah, it was great to see everyone for another episode, and I hope to see you soon. Thanks. Bye.